Well, I'd like to welcome everybody here today, those on the internet. Hello to you. We're sorry that you can't be with us today. I'm going to hop into our message today because I want to discuss a topic that's going to affect every single person in this room, every single person that's ever lived, and every single person that will ever live. And what I want to do is I want to talk about the generation culture. I'm going to talk about what it is, why it matters, and how to bridge the gap. So if you want a title for my message today, I do have a PowerPoint presentation. The title is, as you see, is Many Generations, One Destination. My wife and I had an opportunity last year to fly up to my parents' house. They were celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. And we were sitting in the airport, and we had a couple hours to kill. And we were just sitting there, and we were just people watching. And it's amazing how every single person that we saw had their head down, and they were on their phone, they were on their iPad, or they were on their computer. Nobody was talking to each other. Everybody had their head down, and they were immersed in that world that they were in. And my wife and I just were talking about that, and we said, you know, we didn't have that growing up. You know, we didn't have phones and computers and iPads. We talked to each other. And even if we could have those things, we probably couldn't afford it. On that same trip, we went to Nashville to go see my daughter, my granddaughter, who is celebrating her 5th birthday. And we were sitting on the couch and we were watching television. And she was watching one of her favorite television shows. I think it was Roly Poly Oly. I just like saying that. It sounds funny. But something happened, right? The TV shut off and we weren't able to watch the show. So my 5-year-old, who was just turning 5, grabbed the remote, turned on the TV, navigated the smart TV, found the show that she was watching, and resumed watching it. Now, for you, some of you out there, you're going, yeah, that sounds easy. For me, I don't know what you're talking about. I had to go ask my granddaughter for help, right? I don't know these things. The point is that times have changed, haven't they? And I want to say that they've changed for the better. But as time has gone on, things have gotten worse. Not only have we gotten farther away from God, we've also gotten farther away from each other. Show of hands, how many of you have ever been to Disney World and seen the Carousel of Progress? A couple of you have. It's an animated show that shows an American family over a span of 100 years. It takes them from, 100 years ago till today. And it shows them all the things that have changed through the years. And there's a catchy little tune and it says, now is the time, now is the best time. All right, I can't sing it. But you'll remember that. It'll be in your head all day. I know it will. But it shows how times have changed. And you see this. I mean, 100 years ago to now, we have lights in our homes. We have refrigerators. We have gas or electric stoves. We have planes that we can fly in, cars that we can drive, radios that we can listen to, televisions that we can watch. We have the internet. We have smartphones. And yes, we have AI technology. Think about this. None of these things existed for 5,900 years. That blows my mind. That this just literally hasn't taken place in our world, in our society, but for the last 100 years. And as I mentioned, times have gotten worse. Knowledge is doubling. In 1900, it was doubling at the rate of every 100 years. In 1945, knowledge was doubling every 25 years. In 1982, it was doubling every year. And today, according to CIO.com, knowledge is doubling at the rate of every 12 hours. How many of you have gotten in a cell phone recently, right? You have a cell phone in your pocket, I guarantee you in another week it's going to be obsolete. And we're becoming more exposed to things at a faster pace that it's hard to keep up with. Our brains were never designed to go that fast. In 2005, 2% of the population in this country owned a smartphone. That number jumped to 27% in 2010. And today, over 97% of Americans have a smartphone. It's almost reversed from just a few years ago. And I'd like to be one of the 2% that don't have one, because I'd actually like to have my life back. But with all this rapid change, something else began to happen. The older generation was having a hard time understanding and communicating with the younger generation, and the younger generation was having a harder time communicating with the older generation. So, I have 3 points today. My first point is, number one, is what is a generation? According to the dictionary, it's a group of individuals, most of whom are the same age, have the same ideas, the same problems, and same attitudes. Right? You know this because if you're 50 years old and you hang out with 50-year-olds, you're in that generation. The average span between the birth of parents and the birth of their offspring usually is going to be between 20 to 30 years, somewhere in that ballpark. The Bible definition for a generation refers not to just an age group, but to a group of people united by their response for God in their time. I don't have this up on the slide, but you could put in your notes Psalm 24, verse 6. It says, "This is Jacob, the generation of those who seek your face." And you can also put in your notes Matthew 12, 39, which I don't have on the screen, which says, "Jesus spoke of this generation," referring to the people's belief or unbelief. For our discussion today, we're going to be addressing generations from time periods. And there's six of them that I want to discuss briefly that span over the last 100 years. I also would like to talk about the generations within our church. There's first generation Christians. A first generation Christian is those individuals like my parents who didn't know the truth before. Maybe they, my parents' case, they were Catholic. So they were called by God to come into the church. They didn't, and there's some people that don't have any religious background or belief at all. Maybe you're an atheist and God decided to call you. And you came into the church and now you become a first generation Christian. Then there's second generation Christians. These are often the children or grandchildren of the ones that came through the faith because of their parents or their grandparents. Like myself and myself. I'm a second generation Christian. My parents came into the faith. I came with them. And then there's third and fourth and fifth generation Christians whose parents or grandparents and great grandparents were already called in the way into God's way. This would be my wife. She's a third generation Christian because her parents' parents were called into the faith. But I want to share with you some information today that was given to me by my daughter's father-in-law, who got it from a lady by the name of Dawn Yoder, who is currently the CEO of Global Priority Solutions, and she also functions as a trainer and curriculum writer. So on the screen, I'm going to go through the five generations. And before I go into this, we have that up on the screen. Randy, did I send you that slide? Yes. By the way, thank you for Randy and the crew in the back. Before we get into this, I really want you to wrap your head around this. These generations and these characteristics that I'm going to show you is real. And I want to show you how different things have changed through the years. And how we're going to wrap this up at the end is to show how we're all going to come together. So first we have the builders. Show of hands, how many were born between the ages of 1925 and 1945, please? Okay. That would make you 81 to 100 years old, somewhere in that ballpark. These would be my grandparents. Unfortunately, they're not alive. What shaped your worldview was the Great Depression, Roosevelt's New Deal, and World War II. core characteristics is that you're known for your resilience and loyalty and your commitment to service. This generation built our country for what we have today. Many of them grew up in the Great Depression, and as a result, they saved everything. You're laughing because you know it's true, right? My grandma, when she died, had a lot of stuff. Okay? The builders also had a great respect for authority and rules, and generally favored order and structure and established institutions. They helped build the modern society that we live in, and they had a do-it-because-I-said-so mentality. You're laughing because you know it's right. This age group here, you did what you told, and you didn't ask questions. Their line of communication was face-to-face letters or a formal phone call or a letter. I remember my grandma used to write me letters all the time. And I would text her. Didn't matter to her. She didn't have a phone. So how does she even get the text? Baby boomers. How many of you were born between the ages of 1946 and 1964? All right. That's me. That's my wife. Actually, that's my parents. I apologize. That's my parents and my in-laws. I got ahead of myself. I'm not a baby boomer. Not yet. Sorry, Mom and Dad. Anyway, what shaped your worldview was Vietnam War. I wasn't even born then. Vietnam War, the Cold War, Civil Rights Movement, the rise of television and rock and roll, the assassination of JFK and Martin Luther King. Core characteristics is they had a live-to-work method, and they often measured their value by what you do professionally. These individuals wanted to know your title and your place in your hierarchy. When my dad gets somebody on the phone, he wants to speak to the boss. Right? You baby boomers out there, you know what I'm talking about? You don't want to talk to the person that answered the phone. You want to talk to their boss, and you want to know their title and their rank. This generation often struggles to mentor younger people because they perceive the younger people as being entitled and arrogant. Because their parents were builders, and they did what they were told to do. This generation had face-to-face meetings, telephone calls, and emails. The next generation is Generation X. This is me. Yes, finally. If you're born between the ages of 1965 and 1980, please raise your hand. All right. That's my wife and I. We had the Persian Gulf War, the Challenger explosion, which I remember vividly sitting in a class in high school. And I got out and I cut class and I watched it in the media room. So I remember watching that. You also had the AIDS epidemic and the rise in divorce, which, by the way, tripled in the United States during this time frame. As a result, we had what was called the latchkey kid phenomenon. This was the first generation to regularly come home to an empty house. Both parents were working or divorced. They had left, what was left to entertain themselves was video games, MTV, and they had a reliance of technology as a social companion. You know how I know this? Because both my parents, thankfully, my dad worked, my mom stayed at home. But I had a lot of friends in our neighborhood that we grew up with, and I'd go over their house after school. And their parents were either divorced or both of their parents worked. And you know what we did? We watched MTV or we played Pong on their television. Pong was an old game back then. You young people don't know. Or actually, it was Atari came out, which was pretty cool. Hey, listen, I didn't have to go to the store and put 25 cents in to play a Pac-Man game. I could sit there in the house and play it. But that's where this is headed. Remember, you builders and baby boomers don't understand this because you didn't have video games back then. They preferred action over talk, and they'll test your consistency before they follow your lead. Your actions will tell you. Don't tell me. Your actions are going to prove to me how you do things. That's how my generation works. An email, a phone call, a face-to-face, or a text message. That's how we like to communicate. Again, so if I'm texting somebody who's a builder, who cares? builders don't want to be texting. They'd rather write a letter or call somebody on the phone. Next, we have millennials or Gen Y. How many of you were born between the ages of 1981 and 1995? Be proud. Raise your hand. You're 31 to 45 years old. I wish I was still that young. I have two children in this category, Nick and Frank. They experienced 9/11, the war on terror, the Great Recession, and the housing crash. This is a generation that had the rise of the internet, smartphones, and social media. I didn't have this when I was growing up as a kid. So one generation before this, I didn't have a computer. In fact, I remember when my son turned 3 years old, I bought him his first PlayStation. And I remember sitting there playing with him on the phone. He's 3 years old. And it was exciting for those that generation that because we didn't have it and we were able to give it to our kids. They had also experienced school shootings and increased on focus on school safety. I remember when I went to school, we didn't have to worry about that. You know, the only thing you had to worry about was a school bully, and then you just took out your fists and you just fought them. You had the launch of YouTube, Google, Facebook, and other tech platforms. This generation was the first to grow up in a fully digital world. Participation trophies, structured schedules, and team-building experience often define much of their early development. When I played Little League and baseball, if I didn't finish in first place, you know what I got? Nothing. Try harder next year. Fortunately, I played on a team that we went undefeated for 7 years in a row, so I didn't know what losing was. But this generation, you finished in last place, they wanted something. Millennials tend to challenge traditional hierarchy and expect to be heard regardless of their position or tenure, and they're viewed as being entitled or overly sensitive. This is a smart generation, and it's one that, unfortunately, the older generation looks past because we don't see them hold those same values that we did. But times have changed. They prefer texting, emails, messaging apps, video calls, and social media. My kids like to FaceTime, right? Here we don't see anybody writing a letter. Next is Generation Z. How many are born between the ages of 1996 and 2012? I have one daughter that falls in that category. That's you're between the ages of 14 and 30. You had to face global terrorism, school shootings, social justice movement, and the digital immersion. This generation was the first to grow up entirely in a digital world. Their experiences have cultivated a generation that is informed, connected, and more socially aware, but they're also more anxious, skeptical, and stressed out than any other prior generation. And I know this because I have a daughter, and she tells me this, and we hope you don't mind me telling you this, B. But they're stressed out. Very stressed because they're having to deal with a lot of the pressures that go on about them in life. Gen Z tends to be more independent than previous generations. They value truth over tradition, and they tend to distrust institutions. This is partially why we start seeing a little bit of a diversion here as they get older and you start hitting 18 and you start leaving church. This is probably one of the reasons why. They value truth over tradition. They want to be heard and understood and not stereotyped. They come across as blunt or disengaged, but it's often a different style of communication. And they like to question, clarify, and confirm before moving forward. I admire this. In fact, the Bible teaches us that principle, that we're to prove all things. This generation does that. They like texting, messaging apps, short videos, and social media, and voice notes. And my last generation, if you're between the ages of zero, if you're actually under the age of 13, raise your hand. See the little ones in the back. Yes. You're the alpha generation. You're the first generation that is shaped by birth with smartphone streaming and smart technology. My granddaughter, again, smarter than I am in being able to navigate a smart television. I didn't know what she was doing. They grew up with voice assistants like Alexa, AI, smart devices. I mean, Alexa, that's a girl I knew in high school. Now you talk to somebody and they tell you what the weather is. This generation tends to be highly independent in how they access information through YouTube and interactive media. They're highly influenced by global events such as COVID-19, climate change, and the widespread movement of social movements. They're prone to shorter attention spans because they get those bite-sized information from TikTok and Instagram and YouTube and all that. Remember, information is doubling at the rate of every 12 hours. This generation does not know anything else but what they have in front of them. They're already experiencing screen play rather than virtual environments and toys. Again, they would rather have a tablet in their hand than a toy. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? That's our generations over the last 100 years. But why does this matter? Why does this matter? You know, every single person in this room is different. We all have a different story to tell, and we all come from different generations. Everybody in this room raised their hand at a different time that I asked. And we all look at life differently, yet God loves each and every one of us. He expects us to get along with one another, and he expects us to help one another. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2 for my first scripture. Ephesians chapter 2. Because it matters, because despite our differences, we are all special to God. Every single one of us are special to God. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 8. It says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, and not of works, lest anyone should boast." And none of us in this room can say we're here because of our own doing. That's God's choice. But I love verse 10. It says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, for God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." That word workmanship is, in the Greek, means something that is made. The dictionary says it's a product or result of labor and skill and work. It says we're God's workmanship. God specifically took the time to mold and shape each one of us. I don't know how he did it. When he took the clay and he formed Adam from it, or he took the rib out of Adam and he made Eve, I can't wait for God to sit down and have a class with us and show us. Today we're going to, you know, we have history, we have English, we have social studies. Today we're going to build a human today. But today we're going to show how the skin works. How does the heart work? The eye. We're going to spend, you know, the next 100 years in talking about the eye. I don't know. But I can't wait to see it. The New Living Translation says that we are God's masterpiece. And when I think of masterpieces, I think of Michelangelo's David, the statue that's in Florence, Italy. Yeah, I did some research on this and found that it took Michelangelo 3 years to complete this statue. And what was most fascinating about this statue is that it was carved from a single piece of marble. One piece of marble. Many say it's one of the greatest achievements in Renaissance history. And they've tried to replicate it, but they couldn't. In fact, I think somebody cut off one of his toes and they tried to recreate it and they couldn't even do it. Even with the technology that we have today. He studied the human anatomy in great detail. Everything from the muscles, veins, and bones were chiseled out perfectly. By hand. Brethren, God is doing that to each and every one of you and me in this room today. He's chiseling us. He's shaping us. He's carving us. He's molding us. and the trials that we have and the life that we live, whether it's good or bad. God says, I want to make you better. And it doesn't matter if you're a builder, if you're a baby boomer, a Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Q, Gen whatever. God says, I created you in my image, and I want you to look like me. Let's go to John 15. John chapter 15. How special that God took dirt and he made us part of his family. And it doesn't matter, again, the generation that you're in. It doesn't matter if you're a first generation Christian, a second generation Christian. We're all part of God's family. John 15, 16. You did not choose me. None of us in this room chose God. The only reason that we chose God is because God tapped us on the shoulder and said, come on, knucklehead, I need you to come with me now. I'm ready for you. You ready for me? He's waiting for us to choose him. God says, you didn't choose me. I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit. See, we have a responsibility and a job. We have to do something. It's not just sitting here and occupying a chair and putting on a nice suit or dress. We actually have to bear fruit. We have to walk the talk. And that your fruit should remain, and that whatever you ask of my Father in his name, he may give you. You know, God didn't create us perfect, did he? He didn't. And I go back to the Garden of Eden. You know, he could have very well have eliminated the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He could have just put the tree of life in there. He could have made your life super easy. But he didn't, did he? He gave us opportunities to build character. Again, he expects us to get along with each other, to use his spirit, to make the changes so that we could act and be just like him. No matter what generation you grew up with or grew up in, coming into God's way is unique for each one of us. And he calls us all at different times in our lives, doesn't he? I know for me, personally, you've probably heard this story before. If you haven't, I'll tell you now. If you have, well, stay awake for a minute. It'll be over. I grew up in the church. I came into the church when I was 5 years old. And I kept the Sabbath, the holy days. I made a lot of friends. I learned how to play volleyball and basketball, played on a softball team, right? Took the old 64 lesson correspondence course. Any of you ever take that one? The big one? Oh yeah, right? I even stood up for the Sabbath at age 13 when I played baseball and walked off the field because it was coming down to sundown and I didn't want to pitch into the Sabbath. And you think, wow, this guy had it. And then I moved to Florida when I was 20. I met the girl that I was going to marry at the feast that year. Stopped keeping the Sabbath for some reason. I just decided that this wasn't for me anymore. And really the only time I went to the feast, and actually I went to the feast every year except for 1 year, but I used it really as an excuse to get off from work. And I even became, I told you this before, my little kid's little league baseball coach on Saturday. I'm not proud of this. But I did this, again, for 20 years until that one Saturday morning where I got into the car accident. And God says, are you ready now? Are you ready? Remember, God says, I called you. You didn't choose me. I chose you. And he never gave up on me. And brethren, he's never going to give up on you either. He said that if he started a good work in you, he's going to finish it. No matter what that looks like in your life. No matter what your health problem is or your relationship issue with your spouse or your job. God says, if I called you, I'm going to finish that work in you. Like Michelangelo, he's going to finish that sculpture. And it's going to be beautiful. Show of hands here in this room. How many of you grew up in the church? How many of you grew up in the church? Please raise your hands. Fantastic. So you are a second, third, fourth, or fifth generation Christian. And you know, for some of us, for us that grew up in the church, doing it was the easy part, wasn't it? I mean, I get up and go to church with my parents. Why? Well, they said, you get up and go because you're coming with us to church today. Right? So, okay. But you know why I did what I did was why I left the church. Because I didn't know why I did what I did. I knew I had to keep the Sabbath. I just didn't know why. And I looked at the world, just personally, from somebody who's been on the other side of this, I looked at the world as being shiny, new, exciting. Like there's something out there that I'm missing. And what I didn't realize was it's more like a hot stove. I didn't miss anything. Let's go to Proverbs 5. And unfortunately, I have a lot of scars to show for it. Proverbs 5. This is basically speaking about an immoral or an adulterous woman, but you can use this for the world world as well. And you'll see here in a minute what I'm talking about. Proverbs 5, 1 through 6. My son, by the way, this is Solomon here, who arguably is the wisest man that ever lived. Randy, we're on Proverbs 5, verse 1 and 6. There we go. Thank you. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. You know, there's knowledge, or there's knowledge and wisdom. Solomon saying, pay attention to those things that I'm teaching you. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. This is exactly what the world looks like. Smooth as oil. Shiny like a new toy. But, that word but. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood and as sharp as a two-edged sword. It'll cut you in half. And this world doesn't take prisoners. Her feet go down to death, and her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her life, her ways are unstable. God says, don't even think about it. Don't even get your mind going in that direction. Because what happens is when it does, it's like a slope. You're going downhill. It says, and you do not know them. You don't know them. This is what will lead you away from church. Because you stop coming to church one week, and you go out and you hang out with your friends. You miss church again the second week. By the third week, it's no big deal. And after a month or two, you're just off doing your own thing. And it's easy to do that if you're not grounded to the truth. Because again, as I told you, most of the world, what they have to offer isn't good. And if you grew up in the church, this is all you know, and the world looks like a fun place. It looks different. And we're drawn to differences sometimes, aren't we? Many of you that didn't go out on Friday night with your friends, you know, you heard about those parties that they went to or the good times that they had. But you know what they didn't tell you was the hangover they had the next morning, or the premarital sex or the promiscuous sex that they had, or the fights that they got into, or the trouble that they got into. You know, I remember when I was growing up in church, we had a 16-year-old girl in our congregation. And she did. She went out with her friends one Friday night. And she went in the back of a pickup truck, and they were driving down this road. And the truck went off the side of the road, and she got thrown off the back. She went up, she hit her head, and she wound up having brain damage. She was never the same person again after that. Let's go to 1 John 2. I never forgot that. But yet I still left the church. So apparently I did forget it. That's my point. We're blessed to know the truth, people. We are so blessed to know God's way. Remember, I think I gave a sermon about your tin can. Right? keep that tin can as undented as you possibly can in your life. Every dent that you put in that tin can in your body is another dent that you're not going to be able to get out. It's going to be hard to get out. 1 John 2:15. God says, don't love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father isn't in him. So if you don't believe that, if you don't believe don't go out in the world, then God says, well, just understand that if you do want to be a part of that, then God's love is not going to be inside of you. That's not a good place to be. But he tells us in verse 16, what's in the world? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It's the same three things that were in the Garden of Eden. It's the same three things that affect us in our life. It's the same three things that are going to affect my grandkids and their kids and their kids. Because it works. It says it's not of the Father, but it's of the world. And the world is passing away and the lust of it. So all these things that we worry about, all these parties and all these things that we think we're missing out on, it's all going to be gone someday. What are we holding on to it for? You know what's going to last forever? Continues, it says, but he who does the will of God abides forever. God's will. You know, for the rest of you that didn't raise your hand, this means that you grew up in the world. So how many of you were first generation Christians? How many of you were called into the faith? Came out of the world? Either you were in a church before or you just came in. Yep. I'd say almost half and half. You know, maybe you did attend a church. Again, maybe you attended those Friday night parties. Maybe you kept Christmas, Easter, Valentine's Day, and all that. And when your eyes were open to the truth, you started to ask questions, didn't you? You asked questions like, what's the difference between Saturday and Sunday? What are holy days? You know, why is Christmas wrong? What's the purpose of man? What do you mean we don't eat lobster and shrimp? What in the world is a matzah? Right? All these questions you asked. And many of you consumed yourself with reading and studying the Bible. You read church booklets. You asked for a meeting for the church, for the pastor to come out for a visit. You started attending church services, and there was a level of excitement and enthusiasm. And it was contagious. You know, if you came into the church and you're new, you're like that new toy that that five-year-old gets in that box of old toys that they have, right? You ever see Toy Story? Right? The new toy comes in and everybody wants to play with it. Right? And that's how you feel, right? A new person gets smothered when they first come into the church because we see the excitement that you have. It's like you saw the sunrise for the first time in your life. Us second, third, and fourth, and fifth generation Christians, we've seen hundreds of sunrises. I wouldn't say it gets old, but sometimes we take that for granted. You know, I remember when I first got baptized, I mean, it was 6 months after I got baptized. I was on Morris Bridge Road at 5:30 in the afternoon. I remember this like it was yesterday. I was bawling my eyes out to my father, and I said, Dad, something's wrong. I don't have God's Spirit. He said, what do you mean? I said, I just don't feel like I've seen people come into the church, and they're all excited, and, you know, you get that look on your face, and you're happy to be here. I said, I just don't feel that. And he said, son, he says, you're not going to feel that way. He says, you already know it. He said, the excitement's going to come when you start figuring out how to apply it to your life. And then God's going to continue to work with you and give you that Spirit to help change you. And my dad was right. My dad was right. Because if you didn't grow up in the church, if you did not grow up in the church, you proved why you kept God's laws before you knew how to. Again, I think young people, I think this is why we lose the young people, is because you don't make it your church. If your parents told you to come here today, you obeyed your parents. Good for you. But we want you to stay here. You have to make this your church. You have to know why you're here. Why do you keep the Sabbath? Why do you keep the holy days? Again, at some point, this is going to have to become your church. This is going to have to become your God. you're going to have that personal relationship with God and Jesus Christ yourself. And no matter what age group you grew up in, or if you came up in the church, or if you were older, we can all help each other get there, can't we? And that's the purpose of my message today. Because I wanted to show you from builder generation to alpha, from first generation Christian to 10th generation Christian, we may all have a different walk and purpose in life, but we're all headed in the same direction. And we all need to help each other get there. This brings me to my third point. How do we bridge the gap? I have three subpoints under this. My first is, first we need to understand that we're all one body. Let's go to Galatians 3, verse 20, please. Galatians 3:20. This is the Apostle Paul says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a builder, a millennial, or a Gen X or Gen Y, we're all the same to God. Again, understanding this concept is going to help us better and to know that we're not better than anyone else, which is really what we see in our society and our generation today, don't we? That's why I think we have so many problems, is that the older generation thinks that they have it right and the younger generation thinks that they have it right, and nobody wants to talk about it and figure out how do we come together to get to that one destination. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 12. Because we all have different roles to play. 1 Corinthians 12:12. For as the body is one and has many members, all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized in the one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, whether first generation Christians or second generation Christians, whether you're a millennial or a builder, we've all had been made to the drink into one Spirit. We're all in this room. Every one of us raised our hands at a different time when I asked. For in fact, the body is not one member but many. Verse 18, but now God has set the members, each one of them in the body, just as he's pleased. You're here because God wants you to be here. You have a responsibility to act and to react to that calling. You young people, if you're not baptized, work on that. Ask questions. Don't just show up. Be involved. You older people, we're going to talk about this later, help them. Don't look down on them. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. Now you are the body of Christ and members individually. So if we want to get along with each generation, it starts with understanding that we are all the same to God. Second is we have to have communication. We actually have to talk to one another. We have to learn about that. You know, what I find in our congregation is that we tend to talk to our own peers. All the groups that we get involved with all seem to be the same age groups, pretty much. Or you might be a one generation separated from another. But very rarely will you have an Alpha or a Gen X talk to somebody who's a builder. Again, not that this is bad. I'm not trying to discourage you guys from having conversations. But I think we can all do better, can't we? How about you young people? You know, do you ever go up to the older people and strike up a conversation with them? Do you? I'm considered old. Come talk to me. James 1:19. You can put this in your notes. It says that we are to be quick to listen and slow to talk. You know what this means? This means that you need to be a good listener. And if you're going to be a good listener, it means you have to be in front of somebody who's talking. Right? Don't text them. I know, it's funny. This is no joke. I remember a couple years ago sitting on my couch, my kids had their friends over, and they're sitting on the phone. They're sitting on their phones, just texting each other. And you know, one would text, the other would laugh, text, and they'd go back and forth. Like, what are they doing? They were texting each other, talking to each other, right next to each other. They weren't even speaking. They were texting. Don't do that. Proverbs 1:5, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Ask questions. Listen without judging. Understand that there may be differences in how you view life. And you will. A builder is going to look at life a lot differently than somebody who's my generation or my kid generation or my grandkids generation. Let's take a look at something in John chapter 4. Let's look at an example of Christ. This is a great example. But you know, this shouldn't stop us from learning and building bonds with one another, should it? Again, that's my point. We're one congregation. And sometimes it feels like we're separate because we all have these little cliques or bonds that we want to fall into, or groups of people that we normally like to talk. And I love to talk to the same people all the time, but branch out. I'm speaking to myself too. I need to do a better job of that, and I will. John 4, verse 4. But he, Christ, needed to go through Samaria. And so he came into the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of the ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well, and it was about the sixth hour. And a woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." I said, "Oh, what? Why?" And I did some research. You know, back in 722 BC, when Assyria conquered Israel, there was a hatred between the Jews and Samaritans, right? After Assyrian conquest, the foreigners settled in Samaria and intermarried with Israelites, creating Samaritans, who mixed worship with God and pagan practices. They also built their temple on Mount Gerizim instead of worshiping in Jerusalem. And because of this, the Jews viewed them as being impure and false worshipers, while Samaritans resented the Jews and they rejected them, which leads to their hostility. So when Jesus comes to this woman by the well, who's a Samaritan, this is like an alpha coming to a builder generation, you know, back on the ends of the spectrum. Or first generation Christian coming to a 10th generation Christian. It's probably even worse than that, because there was a level of hatred that went back hundreds and hundreds of years. But Christ here was practicing the art of communication. He was teaching us that despite our differences, we can still get along with each other. And you know, he never once condemned the woman for being a Samaritan. In fact, if you go on to read that passage, he told her to drink of the living waters that he had. We should never put anybody down, especially when speaking to somebody from a different generation. We need to look to help those who came into the church later, or vice versa, because we can really help one another. We need to find some common ground, right? So if you're struggling, you don't know what to talk about, find out what they like to read. Maybe find out what kind of music they like to listen to, or a particular food or hobby or sport, or their favorite Bible character, or their favorite feast site. You younger people, when you talk to the older people, don't be intimidated. They're probably just as scared to talk to you as you are. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 9. It's okay. Older people talk to the younger talk to the older. help each other. If you're a first generation Christian, right, and you came into this church and you did all those things and you're talking to somebody who's a second and third generation Christian, you know, they may be contemplating going out in the world doing those things. And you might be able to tell them, hey, I've been there. I know what that's like. Don't preach to them. Be more of a friend to them and help them. 1 Corinthians 9:19. Paul says, for though I am free from all men, I have been myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews. And to those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. And to those who are without law, as without law, not being without law towards God, but under law towards Christ, that I might win those who are without law. And to the weak I became weak, and I might win the weak. And I became all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you. Paul here never compromised his message. You know what Paul was doing? He was connecting with his audience so that they would pay attention. Know your audience, as I like to say. Know your audience. Some of you older speakers, know your audience. Right? Back when I grew up in church, right, 50 years ago, that minister would pound that pulpit and he would give you 50 to 75 scriptures and he'd go on talking for 2 hours and he'd tell you what to do. And you know what? You did it because that's what that generation did. Today, the younger generation, they don't want to know what to do. They want you to tell them why and how. Right, young people? You want to know why. You want to know how to do it. You don't want to be told what to do. It's important, yes, we do need to be told what to do. But you need to know why. Again, I left the church because I didn't know why I did what I did. I never proved it for myself. Young people, don't fall in that category. You older people, find something that interests the younger people. And you younger people, seek to learn how the older generation dealt with something that you may be dealing with in your life. You know, we don't have gray hair for any good reason. And gray hair means smart. Or salty or seasoned. Whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is that if you don't talk about anything, you won't be able to bridge the gap between the generations. Okay? My third point on how to bridge the gap is value and honor each generation. Value and honor each generation. As I shared earlier, each generation is different. Each one has their strengths and their weaknesses. And if we're to bridge the gap, we need to recognize that no one generation is better than another, and each one needs to show them value and honor. Leviticus 19:22 for you younger people. Leviticus 19, verse 32. You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man, and fear your God, for I am the Lord. This means that we have to have respect for the older generation, and this command is tied directly to reverence to God. You know, the younger generation, show respect to the older people. Call them Mr. and Mrs. Don't call them by their first name. You know, if you're a builder generation, right? Remember I told you what their qualities were? They're all about respect. Respect. And they earned it. They've earned it. If you're over the age of 70, you've earned that respect. If you have a position, you've earned that respect. Show respect. Proverbs 23:22. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. You know, the younger generation can learn from the older generation as they have, again, more life's experience. You know, sometimes I get on my dad and my mom and I talk to them on the phone, and sometimes they talk about the same things over and over again. But you know what? One day, I'm going to pick up the phone, and they're not going to be there to talk to anymore. And all that wisdom that I learned from them I try to apply it to my life because, you know, I tell my kids all the time, wait till you get to be my age, right? Wait till you get to be my age. You don't understand now, but you'll understand when you're my age, right? And my parents say the same thing to me. Wait till you be my age. They say, I'm not that far behind. How does the older generation then bridge the gap to the younger? 1 Timothy 4:12. 1 Timothy 4:12 from the New International Version. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. This is Paul talking to Timothy. Timothy is a young minister. Okay? He says, don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. But set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, and in purity. Young people are important too. Treat them with love and respect because they're just as an important part of the body as you are. Share with them stories about your youth, but remember, don't preach to them. Teach them. Teach them. Teach them why. And how. No, not so much the what, but the why and the how. Brethren, technology and culture have advanced quickly, often creating distances between the young and the old. You know, a generation is more than just an age group. It reflects on how people respond to God in their time. And you know, the problem that we have is that we're all human. We have human nature. And that human nature leads to division. It leads to pride. It leads to arrogance. And to bridge that gap, we need to remember that we are all one body with different but equally important roles. You know, we're only as strong as our weakest link. And remember, we're all headed in the same direction. Second, we must communicate. Listen without judging, learning from one another. Again, even Jesus modeled this by speaking to that Samaritan woman by the well. And lastly, we need to value and honor each generation. Help each generation. So whether you're a builder, a baby boomer, a Gen X, a millennial, a Gen Z, or an alpha, remember again, we're all God's children. And we can all help one another, not only in our physical lives, but also, and more importantly, in our spiritual journey. So remember, when you talk to someone who grew up in the church, their road was different from yours, and vice versa. Understanding these differences will help strengthen the body of Christ and will help bridge the gap between the generations. May you all have a very happy Sabbath.